people all around me, and they're all in fear. They don't seem to want me, but they won't admit I must be some kind of creature if they're having fears. From my party house, I'm afraid to come outside.
Hey, welcome back, fans. This is our 9th podcast.
Guaranteed ape-free this time.
Yeah, this is our Pimpadelic podcast. Oh, yeah.
Whose idea was this?
It was probably mine.
Are you going to put on this voice through the whole podcast?
I won't. Let me just sip a little bit of my Cavassier and put my feet up, relax a little bit, get a little bit back from the microphone, hang back, you know? You know what I'm saying? We can enjoy some quality comics.
Well, perhaps you'd like a Colt 45.
Well, that was racist.
Cuvassier wasn't?
Cuvassier is sophisticated.
Okay. Anyway, in this...
It's like instead of saying black for this episode, I'm going to say urban. Do you understand?
Now see, that's just wrong.
Who are you to judge what's wrong?
Well, who are you to judge what's wrong?
All I'm saying is that I'm sipping my Cuvassier and I refuse to let you bait me like you have in the previous 8 podcasts. This time, I got my groove on. I got my smoking jacket.
Oh, boy. Okay.
You know, I'm waiting for the ladies to show up. So what'd you pick for us there, Trenchcoat? What do you got for us?
Well, given that we're doing, as you say, a Pimpadelic podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I got the first appearance of Jon Stewart in Green Lantern Volume 1, Issue 87.
He's the urban Green Lantern.
Well, he's the black Green Lantern. Okay. I refuse to use that code word urban.
Yeah, that is kind of rude.
I mean, if you look in a Crayola box, what do you have, like, you know, blue, red, urban? No, it's black. Come on, let's speak English.
You have Asian, American Indian, and urban. That covers 3 colors right there. Oh, don't get me started. I've got all 64.
On the cover of Green Lantern 87. We have Jon Stewart here, and you all should know him from the Justice League cartoon. He's standing over a defeated Hal Jordan, and he appears to be yelling at whoever took out Hal, saying, actually, he's addressing the reader directly, saying, "They whipped the Green Lantern, now let them try me."
Yeah, and he's looking pretty righteous.
This is a good cover. This is pretty dynamic. Although, once again, this scene appears nowhere in the actual comic.
Yeah, but this is old school.
This is totally old school. Neil Adams. This is one of the great old school comics artists.
I'm digging this. Yeah, let's get right to it. Okay, here we are on page 1.
Yeah, and we have one of those symbolic type splash pages that... or do we? Wait a minute, let me peek ahead. Oh, no, we don't. Okay, forget what I just said. DC in this era was very fond of just having like a splash page showing stuff that would be happening later in the comic, which I, for a second, thought that that's what this was. But it's not.
So they're actually telling the story in order.
Yeah, they're actually beginning with the story in this one, and here...
So good for DC.
Ooh, yeah, well...
Sorry, I won't do that anymore.
I guess you keep making me lose my train of thought.
I'm sorry. It's a DC comic. It shouldn't be that hard to get back on track.
No, this is true. I'm surprised to hear you admit that as such a fan of DC.
Well, you know... To get some street cred, you know what I'm saying? I have to...
Now, see? No, I'm saying it should be one word. Now, you just enunciated that, so you just blew your whole character you were putting on. Ask me how to spell it.
I'll fix it in post. Okay, keep going.
Green Lantern here is charging his ring, or he was, and apparently there's like an earthquake, which you know anyway, because here it is in big letters, like there's a caption... "This is N," and then in the big giant letters, "Earthquake."
Right. I wasn't sure if that was a sound effect or just a... That's kind of a cool way of doing it.
It's a strange way of doing it, that's for sure.
That's different. Eat at Stan's.
Yeah, well, the Eat at Stan's sign is falling off the restaurant right there. Right, there's an earthquake.
Sure.
Here in whatever imaginary city this is, because it's D.C., so I just assume that this is an imaginary city.
I thought he was from Coast City.
Well, that's an imaginary city.
Oh, okay.
See, but this was during the era where Green Lantern and Green Arrow were traveling around the country. So that's why I can't be 100% positive here that this actually is Coast City.
Did they ever like hook up with any hitchhikers or any babes or anything?
I don't know. I tried to read these. They reprinted these a while ago, and I read maybe the first story, and these comics were really...
Roll down the window, ask a baby if she wants some green, any of that?
Piece you know,
of,
if
piece
if,
of green.
What's the bumper sticker that like white trash truckers have?
Yeah, like that.
Ass grass or something. Nobody rides for free.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah,
ass gas or grass.
I want to cite the art again. This art is really nice. I mean, Neil Adams is a complete nut job if you know anything about him in real life, but the man sure can draw.
Yeah, I really like that bottom panel on the right hand side. The very emotional blonde haired guy is really disturbed and concerned.
That's Guy Gardner, believe it or not.
Is it?
Yeah.
Man, has he changed over the years?
Yes, he has.
Why? He looks like a total wuss here. Like a sensitive fella. And later he turns out to be a real jack.
Yeah, I think this may be the... Now, I should know Green Lantern lore better than this. But this actually may be the point where we get the beginning of that. Because I think he gets put into a coma. And I think in this... And I think after he came out of the coma, it's when he was all of a sudden an asshole.
Right.
So, yeah, we don't see him for, like, years after this story, since he's only in this story at all, because he's the reserve Green Lantern. If Hal Jordan goes down at this point, Guy Gardner's Green Lantern.
Okay.
So, of course, in order to make John Stewart Green Lantern, as we already know they're going to, because we saw the cover, they've got to do something to Guy Gardner here.
Right, so mysteriously, he, of all people, to be not only hurt in an earthquake, but to be saved and recognized, there's Hal Jordan helping him out, which is cracks me up.
That is a bit of a wild coincidence.
A bit.
I mean, we do get a cool panel here of like a bus just smashing into Guy Gardner.
Well, I'm glad he can survive a bus crash like that. That's cool. I mean, obviously he's not too much of a simp.
Well, what's interesting here is Hal's reaction when he recognizes him and saves him. That's ... Guy Gardner. But the stress word here is Guy. What, he was expecting Robert Gardner, Ralph Gardner, Eric Gardner? Well, I don't really understand the stress being on Guy, but okay.
Well, I don't either. What's up with the writer? Or is that an editor thing?
Well, this is Denny O'Neill. I was starting to talk about this earlier. He completely revamped this book. Okay. It was apparently in danger of being canceled. The writer was this really old dude named John Broom, who like was... a typical older man of these times, and he hated hippies and such, and he wasn't exactly, you know, sympathetic to the kids who were actually buying and reading these comics. So, you know, they brought in this kid, Denny O'Neill, well, he was a kid at the time, to revamp the book. He brought in Green Arrow, even though Green Arrow is not in this story, and we're only reviewing this story, even though I think there's like a couple of reprints in it, because we can't be bothered.
Right.
And, he brought in this whole relevance thing, or as I would call it, this whole preachy thing, where every issue he just has to like put on his after-school special persona and preach about some relevant issue of the time, always to the detriment of any drama in the story.
All right, I see. You were giving props to the artist, but looking at this panel here on the right-hand side...
the girl's face?
The girl's face looks like a lion girl or something. She looks a little like... she's not so good.
I have to wonder if that was touched up at all for some reason.
Ooh, man, it looks touched.
Well, they used to do that back then.
Overtouched.
Because, like, guys who were really strong stylists like Neil Adams, and of course, like, and I have to bring them up, like Jack Kirby. For example, in Kirby's case, they would redraw all the Superman faces that he would draw. Because they wanted one consistent, bland look for Superman. And Kirby made him look like Jack Kirby Superman.
Ah, okay, I get it.
But so
there seems no reason why they would turn this girl to Lion Girl, but...
I got nothing.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Here's some interesting guy.
Oh, well, actually, look, Guy's not in a coma after all.
No, even though he was hit by a bus.
Well, he's a reserve Green Lantern.
Well, he didn't have his power ring on.
Well, no, but anybody who's potentially a Green Lantern has to be pretty tough.
Really?
You would think.
Well, I thought they just had to be honest. I didn't think they had to be invulnerable.
Actually, they don't even have to be honest. The only prerequisite... at least at this point in time, to become a Green Lantern was that you had to be, quote, born without fear.
Really?
Yes.
Obviously, maybe he should have been afraid of being hit by a bus, though. That's my only...
Well, that just shows you that he is Green Lantern worthy, because, yeah, anybody else would be afraid of being hit by a bus.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was trying to rescue that young girl. I don't know, maybe her panties were showing, and, you know, he was having impure thoughts. He's like, hey, let me save this bitch. She'll be grateful later.
Yeah, hey. I want to see a piece of green.
Let's see, back to the green.
It's all about the green.
Okay, it's so very now, strange. Green Arrow is not in this comic,
though. I was going to ask you if he shows up.
Well, see, this story is only like 13 pages. I suppose there really wasn't room for him.
Oh.
But I feel cheated because I really like Green Arrow. But yeah, here we have... well, go ahead.
Well, just...
You like these little blue dudes.
No, yeah. These are the ultimate guys, right? These are the guys that control the... Green Lantern Corps?
Yes.
I don't remember
their names. They're little blue bosses. They're the Guardians of the Universe,
I guess they're being rendered because he's seeing them, thanks to his lantern. They're being rendered in this green hue, this green haze. It's kind of
odd.
Yeah,
if you look here, it looks like the holographic projection of this Guardian is coming out of his ring.
Even though he's looking the other way, it's just kind of an odd, strange, stylistic, my watcher's over my shoulder deal. Kind of a metaphor.
Well, it kind of works that way,
actually. Yeah, it's pretty good. This is all good art. Slightly over-stylized, but really good art. And
the only problem with Adams is that he can't meet deadlines, so he sort of fell out of the comics industry for the most part.
Well, it's that the Guardians are basically telling Hal, hey, look, we saw that our hero got hit by a bus in your ignoble planet, and we are going to summon yet another substitute for you because you just can't handle the Earth by yourself.
You don't like Hal Jordan, do you?
No, Hal Jordan's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. Okay. Actually, they were being slightly patronizing. That's why I was giving him a little bit of help.
Well, this is a really enlightened caption. Who indeed have the Guardians chosen? To find the answer, come with us to a certain urban ghetto.
Notice that they stress the word urban.
Well,
see, I'm not alone. See, I'm right there with the mindset of
If they call it a black ghetto, then that's racist.
Right. That's why I called this an urban thing. You see?
But
I'm
like,
right there
but
in the
like,
mindset.
No, but
I'm
see,
right there
other...
in the mindset of the 70s editors. I'm that politically correct that I went back in time and stole their vernacular.
Okay, well, defend this. Why is the very first image of black people we see in this story of they're like in the middle of the street gambling and the cops are hassling them?
Yeah, you know what? I was going to talk about that.
Never mind what Jon Stewart here says in the next panel. And by the way, he's wearing an ascot. Come on.
Well,
I just want to say
it's a modcast. Come on,
that's episode 10.
I'm sorry. He's just being. It was the style.
Uh huh. It was the style. And okay, you know what?
It was
I'll give it a chance. Let me check.
Oh, by the way, he's looking slightly pimpadelic.
I was going to say, let me check out his dialogue here. Yeah, fine advice, officer. And you have the hyphens between every syllable, so you know that's how he's saying it.
Right.
Come on.
Maybe you ought to check your law book. Right now. If you remember how they introduced Jon Stewart, there's a story in Justice League, the cartoon, where Jon Stewart was, they showed his backstory, and not only did they show a barber shop, but they also showed him playing basketball.
Oh yeah, you had like every barber shop,
yeah,
basketball court, Korean deli,
so
everything.
What's really sad is we had it in the white, Lily White editors were wrong in 70s, but they still haven't gotten it right in Hollywood 30 years later.
Actually, the Justice League people should be ashamed of themselves because Dwayne McDuffie's black and he is an ex-comic book writer who would write for that show. And you would have thought he would have been like, hey, come on, this isn't cool.
Really?
Just saying.
Does he really work for them or just get them coffee?
Well,
I'm just saying. I mean, if he really had any power, don't you think he'd march into the offices and say, hey, officer?
You're just on a roll in this episode, aren't you?
I don't know what I'm on, man. I just want to give this.
Maybe you should give the Cuvassier a break.
maybe I should. All right, go ahead. Let me sip a little more while you talk.
The cop threatens him with his nightstick, and okay, well at least we have some cops being racist, so there is some realism in this story. Blast them! They got no respect. And, yeah, he's clearly the bad cop. The other guy's being the good cop. Oh, this really is fiction. We have good cops. And,
That's Coast City.
It is Coast City?
I don't know where it is. It's wherever Jon Stewart's from. Where is he from?
You know what? I don't know where... You
is
know
it
what
like Kansas City?
Apparently, according to the caption, he's from, quote, a certain urban ghetto. And they feel that's all we need to know about his background.
Damn.
That's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad.
So then, now, Hal is, like, kind of being a dick here. He's telling the Guardian, you want me to trust this guy, meaning Jon Stewart, with a power ring. And the Guardian calls him a racist, and Hal's like, No, it's just, it's not because he's black, it's because he's a dick.
Yeah, it's not because he's black, it's because he's urban. Now, what's up with the, he looks like he's, all right, okay, so we've got Hal Jordan telling the Guardian that he thinks he's making a mistake. Now, who's Hal Jordan? And we see a little hint of Hal Jordan arrogance, ladies and gentlemen. We see later that somehow or another he thinks that he knows best, and later the seed is planted for him to supplant the Guardians and wipe them out. You can see even 30 years ago.
I am going to ruin your whole little rant here. Hmm? Now, post Infinite Crisis 6, now that the entire past of the DC Universe has been altered, how do you know any of that actually happened now?
Only because I'm looking at something that lets me know that Hal Jordan has been a dick. It's like, you know, I'm a test pilot, look at me, you know, I fly at 3,000 miles an hour, I know best. Even though these people have been running the universe for 2, 3, 4 billion years.
Well, I would say, who the hell are these people to be running the universe? They're little blue men.
They're little blue men from outer space. You always respect little blue men from outer space.
I don't respect little blue men from outer space. And here's why you shouldn't either, because now they also have little blue women. There were never little blue women before.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead. And now I don't know where the little blue women came from.
On your universe, are there female watchers? Somehow I see the Guardians and then I think of watchers.
Yes,
I know they're not the same.
Yes, because there was an issue of the Hulk where there was a watcher who was relaying his sad story to Bruce Banner, which was that his wife was dying and all he could do was ... watch. So there you go. Unless, of course, his wife's name was Fred.
Oh, I see.
But if that's not the case, I would have to assume, yes, there are female watchers.
Is his wife... If his wife...
And yes, the female watchers are probably bald, too.
Oh. If his wife is with another watcher, does the third watcher watch?
He might have to. That might be his assigned sector of space, that particular bedroom.
Okay, your entire universe is perverted. I just want to let you know that. Okay, now we're back to my universe, which is nice and clean. See what I did there?
Well, you made my universe perverted.
I can make any universe perverted. You should see what I do to my own universe. Do you see...
Could you make the Archie universe perverted?
Give me time. Do you see... So, we've got this... We see the seeds of Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan needs a comeuppance. Is he going to get it sooner?
I dispute everything you're saying.
The top panel, he clearly needs a comeuppance. Now, is he going to get it in this
issue? No, he's telling the Guardian, quote, frankly, I think you're making a mistake.
I'm going to say...
And, you know, actually, good for Hal Jordan, and here's why. At the beginning of this mega story with Green Arrow, even though Green Arrow, again, is not even in this story... Hal will just mindlessly obey these dudes. And now, because, frankly, Green Arrow has been a good influence on him, we're seeing Hal question authority. And that's a good thing. That's how I'm taking that.
Okay, all right, I'm just
telling
you.
Nobody was thinking of Parallax when this comic was being written.
I know, I'm just telling you. It seems very interesting to me. Just saying. So we're going forward. He thinks he's going to make a mistake, but the Guardian says, look, F you. We know what we're doing. Give it a shot, will you? You know, so now Hal is trying as best he can to make friends with John Stewart. John Stewart at first is like, hey, I don't want to have a ring. And then he, you know, changes it around and says, hey, okay, you know what? All right, I'll give it a shot. But I like what he says about the mask. Does he say it in this one or the next page?
The next page. And see, here's the thing. Hal's basically offering a job. And John Stewart's like, well, considering jobs aren't exactly, I'm so glad he doesn't say ain't. Because we're going to review another comic after this, and, anyway. Considering jobs aren't exactly plentiful for black architects in the land of the free these days. Okay, now see, I don't know if that's good or bad, that he's an architect. Because it seems that in comics, they always go one of two ways. Either the black characters are, well, like you see in Hollywood movies, they're either like janitors or whatever, or athletes, or, you know, some other, like, thing nobody respects, or they have to be like Mr. Terrific, the smartest man in the world, you know, some kind of super scientist. It's like there's no black middle class in comics.
I think architects are pretty much middle class, aren't they?
No, they make too much money to be called middle class.
Well, what do you want? You want Cliff Huxtable there in the Green Lantern uniform? Is that what you want?
Well, actually, I don't see why, because, I mean, why wouldn't Mike Brady's architectural firm hire John Stewart? I mean, it was about the same era.
Mike Brady from the Brady Bunch?
Yeah, he was an architect, right? Wouldn't you think he would hook John Stewart up with a job?
Well, I thought he preferred young white boys.
No, the actor who played Mr. Brady preferred young white boys. But Mr. Brady himself was very much into his lazy wife, who was a housewife and yet had a maid.
Oh, I see. Was he hitting Alice?
No, no. But, you know, he probably was hitting Marcia. And before you say anything, I'm going to remind you that Marcia was not actually his daughter, so that wouldn't even be incest.
And Jan probably was jealous.
You know, Jan...
Thinking back of Jan.
I'm the only person that thought Jan was hot on that show. She had, like, really low self-esteem, and that's sexy because it makes you think, you know, that she'd do anything.
Dude, braces. Ouch. That's all I can say.
Well, she didn't have braces through the whole show, though.
All I remember is Jan having braces. That's all I remember. Big, hulking braces. And being jealous that Marcia was getting hit by the dad. And I remember that, too, now that you mention it. I had forgotten.
Well, it was all, like, very subtle, but you could tell that's what was going on.
Right. And everybody thought that Carol was hitting, you know, the old one. But I think she was actually hitting the little guy, Peter.
I'm just, well, it was Bobby was the youngest.
Oh, yeah, Bobby.
I'm just thinking of, you know, Mr. Brady and him being with Marcia and crying out himself, Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
Right.
Yeah, Jan probably heard him crying that out through the walls, and that's why she started saying it out of habit.
Right. Right.
This is a Pimpadelic podcast. We're discussing the whitest TV show ever aired.
Well, that was a very Pimpadelic family, if you think about it.
Kind of they did. The way they dressed, actually. Yeah, you have a point.
So we're getting back, and here he's...
Yeah, this is the part you like.
Yeah, I really have respect for him, you know? It's really cool, because Hal Jordan whips him up a costume, and even whips him up a little bit of a mask, a little Halloween
mask. Well, because Green Lanterns wear masks.
Yeah, and I like it that John Stewart just rips it off his face, and throws up, and it goes hiss, you know, it burns, it disintegrates, I've got nothing to hide. Basically, you know, he's not ashamed to be an architect.
Well, he's like, this is who I am, I'm not hiding behind a mask, I'm John Stewart. You could be Green Lantern, I will be John Stewart, comma, space, Green Lantern.
Comma, space?
Comma. Space Green Lantern.
Okay.
And this is also good where Hal teaches him the Green Lantern oath, and he says, that's corny. Except for the part that says, beware my power. He's got a point there, actually. I mean, it's corny and great at the same time, but I can't deny that, like, if a Guardian came down and offered me the chance to be a Green Lantern, like, I would feel a little embarrassed to have to say that Green Lantern oath every day.
I tried once when Mrs. Trekkie and I, back when there was a Mrs. Trekkie, We're trying to get our groove on, and I had put on some funky music, and I tried to do the Green Lantern Oath, and didn't go anywhere. Spent the night on the couch again, watching Star Trek IV, the one with the whales. I sang with the whales that night.
You know, I'm just saying nothing because I'm just letting your story become progressively sadder as you go on.
Well, okay, keep going. I'm sorry. Anyway, back to our Pimpadelic podcast.
Well, yeah, okay. And here they are, like, flying around. He's teaching them how to fly. How the fuck hard can that be? Because the ring does everything for you. And here we have some... the sign says, Welcome, Senator. So I guess some senator arriving here at the airport. And, of course, because it's a comic book, an oil truck, which just happens to be driving around in the airport, but okay.
Well, they do that. They fuel up the plane.
Yeah, well, it goes out of control here, and Hal saves the people, and...
John Stewart saves the oil.
Sort of.
Saves the white man's oil.
Sort of, because notice that John Stewart made sure that this senator and his aides got, like, covered in oil, because we learn later that this senator is a raging racist.
Which is good for John Stewart, by the way.
And
that's some great dude. That's some great art. I'm not really happy with the third panel, but that fourth panel, look at that face.
Well, the second panel I don't think we would ever see in a comic printed today.
Yeah, it's kind of corny.
Corny?
Just a little.
I wouldn't say corny, but the guy's... Okay.
A little shucking and jiving there.
So, yeah. The white senator has oil all over his face, of course, so it's as if he's in blackface. And Jon Stewart's like, hey, baby, haven't I seen you picking cotton someplace?
Yeah.
And the senator is just, like, fuming at him. I don't know, I thought that was funny.
I thought it was great. I had no problem.
I mean, as opposed to Hal Jordan, John Stewart actually does have a sense of humor, which is one of the reasons I don't like the way they portray him in the Justice League cartoon as this hard-ass, boring, humorless Marine. The real John Stewart actually has something of a personality.
Well, I really didn't know too much about the old John Stewart, so I'm looking forward to going to the back of the rack and reading some more of this old stuff.
They eventually did give him his own comic, believe it or not. I think it lasted like 18 issues.
Huh. Now, did they change him? Over the years, or is he
he's mellowed.
Never mind the cartoon.
Well, the real John Stewart has mellowed over the years. He is an architect, after all. He's a thinking man, and he's become more thoughtful. and more philosophical, and he's gotten away from this somewhat stereotypical angry black man stereotype that we're seeing here in his first appearance. And yeah, it was an interesting book. We should review that someday, actually. And Hal Jordan is yelling at Jon Stewart, "You were stupid and irresponsible," he's saying. And Stewart winds up telling him off.
Good for Stewart.
Well, yeah, but then he says, "Listen, Whitey."
Well, you know, Hal Jordan is acting a little white here.
Well, yeah, but he is white.
Well, I mean, but he's acting white.
He is acting white.
He is acting white.
And he does upbraid him. "Don't call me Whitey." So, you know, at least, you know, Hal has some balls. You know, he's not going to stand for that.
All right, well, that's fine. Well, he's a test pilot. You know, he flies at 3,000 miles an hour.
And, oh, here you go. What's the senator saying here in this panel?
Oh, geez.
Given what the senator is about to say, I just want to defend Jon Stewart's previous actions in dousing him in oil and mocking him.
Well, I do like the fact that, okay, what we did miss was the fact that Hal Jordan said, "Okay, look, you want to throw oil on somebody's face? Guess what? Now you're assigned to defend him." So now we've got the senator saying the most racist thing I've ever seen in comics. Understand, I don't have anything against the darkies, but it's scientific fact that their brains are smaller than normal. Because of their limited intelligence, they can't appreciate the finer things. So, you know, and now...
And you know what's actually prescient here is that the senator does even look a little like George Bush.
Wow. You're right.
In that panel. It's like they knew somehow that this guy would come to life decades from then. And I really like Hal Jordan's stance here. Hal's like, he's babbling nonsense, all right, but such stupidity is the price we pay for free speech. Hey, go Hal Jordan.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jon Stewart's getting sick to his stomach, but...
Which is also a correct reaction.
Okay, so Jon Stewart is a little bit... Jon Stewart's paying attention to what's going on, so now we see an assassination attempt. We see a black guy getting up from the audience and shoot at the senator.
And Green Lantern springs into action. Jon Stewart's like, "Fuck that noise." And here we have Hal. He's caught this guy and beat him up in like no time flat.
Right, he's got him in leg handcuffs thingies. Thud. That's a good sound effect.
And okay, and there was another dude and Jon Stewart's got him.
So we're trying to figure out what's going on. We got Hal Jordan that captured one guy and Jon Stewart captured the other guy. Now what's going on here?
Yeah, because it was all a setup. And see, the senator, like, staged a fake assassination attempt on himself.
So we had a black guy pretend to shoot at him.
Right.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. And Green Lantern's yelling at Jon Stewart because, you know, he doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
So, yeah, he's like, "I like this. Your name isn't Green Lantern. You're a disgrace to your uniform, your ring, and yourself." Ooh, a disgrace to yourself. Ooh, that high, mighty, pompous Hal Jordan.
You hate Hal Jordan.
He is so going to get his comeuppance this in 30
is the,
years.
This is the... Yeah, but then everybody will forgive him and he'll become Green Lantern again, so it's okay.
We had to go through that whole Spectre stuff.
Right? Hey, let me annoy you because I know you didn't... Yeah, for a while.
Okay.
I know you didn't read IC6 yet. In Infinite Crisis 6,
Hey. What? Hey, what about our fans? What about our loyal fans?
They've all read it already. All
right.
In Infinite Crisis 6, he saves Batman's life.
Oh.
And there's a great scene where... Like, the captions are like, "And fences will be mended, and friendships will be healed." And Batman, who had been, you know, ragging on Hal Jordan for being a mass murderer, is like holding out his hand, and Green Lantern takes his hand and saves Batman. It was just a great scene. Although you could argue that that makes Batman, well, weak. But we are talking about Batman.
Now, that's funny, because we know that Batman doesn't have any fear. I'm surprised that the Green Lantern didn't fly around after it left. What was it? Uatu? What's his name?
Actually, you know, I think there is an Elseworlds story where Batman does become Green Lantern.
That kind of makes sense.
Batman does have fear, though. He has fear of failure.
Oh, interesting.
He has fear of failure. I think his greatest terror is that he will, like, fail in his crusade to save Gotham City, which, of course, ultimately he will.
So he has a fear of failure?
Yeah.
So we should get him for the podcast.
He hasn't sunk that low yet. Okay. And here we have some, the plots explain that, yeah, it was a fake assassination attempt, and, okay, here, I could have swore there was a point here where they called the senator a congressman, and I was all set to bring that up and point it out as an error, But since I can't seem to find it...
Well, they're all in Congress.
No, it doesn't matter to politicians. They're all corrupt. Oh, here it is. Your colleagues in Congress, where, as we saw an earlier panel where the sign said, welcome, Senator.
That's okay.
This writer's not even paying attention to what
No, that's okay. Writing. They're all Congresses. The both is bicameral. It's both. I don't care. I'm going to give it to him.
And, okay, here's Hal Jordan basically saying, okay, John, I was wrong about you, and, you know, everything's cool. And John Stewart's like, you know, damn right. You know, I am John Stewart, Green Lantern, and, hey, everything's cool, the end. This is funny here, this last caption. Rest assured, John Stewart will return. He did not return for years. They forgot they even had this character. Like, in the late 70s, they created DC. DC created Black Lightning just to have a black hero. They didn't even remember John Stewart existed. Like, they completely forgot about this guy.
You see what I mean with see what I mean? You see what Hal Jordan does? You see what he does? Well, you see with his arrogance what he does?
Wait. He didn't do anything. Hal Jordan didn't make DC forget about John Stewart.
Hal Jordan has ended the universe. Hal Jordan has been death
Not
himself.
Not yet, no. Hal Jordan didn't reboot the universe till like Zero Hour. That was like in the early 90s.
I'm just telling the kind of capability this man has.
Well, not yet. He only has the power of the power ring here.
Well, look, I mean, you know, if you were kind of a stuffy white guy and you had the ultimate, you know, you had like ultimate power, you had this cool hip black guy that was about to get all your chicks, wouldn't you kind of just sort of have the editors conveniently forget?
Maybe Hal used the Justice League's mind wipe machine on the DC editors.
Yeah, now this is a question I was going to ask you too. We have the Marvel. In Marvel, we have a couple of characters that know they're in comic books. Anybody in DC like that? Do the worlds ever cross that somebody in DC actually crosses over?
I do think that Ambush Bug knows he's in a comic.
Ambush Bug?
Ambush Bug, yeah.
Oh.
You don't even want to know.
Yeah, probably not.
No. And with that, we end part one of our Pimpadelic podcast. Stay tuned for part two.
As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries, 'cause if there's one thing she don't need, is another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. Well, don't you understand? A child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world turns. A hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto. And as her young man dies, on a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries.
Thank you, Elvis. We're back for part two of our Pimpadelic podcast.
That is a tasteless fucking song.
That is it. That is. It's from his album Section 8, isn't it?
Okay, I stand corrected. It was a tasteless song, but not as tasteless as that comment.
I'm sorry. We're doing Pimpadelic, and Courvoisier is starting to kick in. You know, and that last comic, I don't know, kind of fired me up a little bit.
We forgot to do a 1 to 10 on it.
Okay, it was so short. I mean, it really didn't... Okay, all right. Let me jump in first for a change so I don't look like I'm echoing you, the Hal Jordan of this podcast.
So I'm destined to go evil and destroy the universe? I
thought you already had. I'm going to give that a... I'm going to give that a 6. I'm going to give that a 6. I wish I could just rate it for the art. If I could rate it for the art, I'd give it an 8. But the entire story, the way that it was executed, was a good story executed poorly. And I'm sorry, a 6.
I'll give it a 5.5. I mean, it is what it is. It really suffers from being dated. But, you know, it was competently written. It was well drawn. And, I'll go with 5.5.
Okay.
I mean, I was going to go with a 6, but then you stole my rating. So, yeah, 5.5.
All right. Okay. That's why I decided to go first for a change. All right. What do you got for us now? Trench coat.
Do you realize we didn't even introduce ourselves this time around?
They know us by now. It's MC Trekkie and Trenchcoat Mafia doing what we do best.
He's being ridiculous. Yeah, he's MC Trekkie, because I would never watch Star Trek. I'm Trenchcoat Mafia. And here in this segment, we are reviewing Power Man 29.
Are you wearing anything underneath the trench coat this time?
Because
last time I had to clean up.
You know, no, I think you're thinking of the Veronica episode.
Ever since...
Veronica was a really hot comic.
Back when you were Doctor whatever that was, I had a little bit more faith. But now that you've been coming around...
You know Trenchcoat Mafia is a way cooler name than that other name.
Again, I'm just going to make sure that you're wearing something underneath that this time. That's all I asked you.
That is not your concern. So Power Man 29. Power Man is a really cool character, actually.
Now we know him. I don't think MC... Never mind. Okay, go ahead. Power Man is a cool character. That's right. Oh, yeah.
Well, he's not cool if he inspires you to keep doing that, I don't think. But
he is cool.
The premise is, like, there was this dude, he was falsely imprisoned, and then he gets superpowers and busts out, and he creates a new identity for himself as Luke Cage. And he rents himself out as a hero for hire. So he's only a good guy for the money, which is just a really cool premise. Now, Luke Cage Hero for Hire didn't sell under that title, so they changed it to, on the cover here anyway, Luke Cage Power Man. And that was just a stupid move. I mean, hey, why not just give him a cape? And hey, why not a kid sidekick? I mean, Hero for Hire was so cool. Power Man, not so much.
Well, I'm sure at the time, you know, try and roll the Wayback Machine, you know, turn it on, go back 30 years. You got to remember what they're thinking of. It's like, okay, why do you have... This is no win for them. Why do you have the black man not doing the right thing for the right reasons? Why does he have to do it for the money?
Well, see, that's a catch-22.
Exactly.
Because even though that's wrong, being a hero for money is just a really cool idea.
So it's also cool that... Here's the thing, is that his outfit looks kind of cool, but then if you
but
look at
But it looks kind of corny at the same time.
And look at his belt. It's made out of chains. Now, what's that saying? Is he making fun
of
slavery?
Well, maybe. He also has, like, manacle-looking bracelets.
I thought they were kind of like Wonder Woman's thing. They're not bulletproof?
No, he's bulletproof, so he doesn't need bulletproof.
So those manacles serve no purpose?
Well, they complete the costume,
which is
both cool and ridiculous simultaneously.
Now, he's being attacked by a guy that also has manacles, so I'm thinking it's a manacle theme.
No, I don't think this villain knows what the fuck he's doing. We have Luke Cage here, and I did want to comment on his costume with the bright yellow disco shirt and so on. Is this a 70s comic? He's fighting a character named Mr. Fish.
Oh, good.
Who looks to be a humanoid fish here on the cover. Now, where a humanoid fish would have gone into a store and bought this corny-looking supervillain costume that he's wearing, I have no idea.
I'm sure he's got minions to go out and buy his clothes for him.
Actually, when we read the comic, he does have minions. And here he's upbraiding Cage. You shouldn't make jokes about my looks, Cage. Nobody laughs at Mr. Fish. Okay, I would just like to say, everybody laughs at Mr. Fish.
I'm even laughing at Mr. Fish.
Children laugh at Mr. Fish. Old people laugh at Mr. Fish. I can't think of anyone that would not laugh at Mr. Fish. He looks like a humanoid fish.
Now,
come on.
Now, who was editing at the time? Who gets the decision to actually put that little arrow that says, here he is, the most frightful villain ever? Whose job is it to stick
That's talk about oversell.
Is that the editor of the book? Is that just some... Who does that? Who at the very end, who looks at the book and says, it just doesn't have quite enough?
Well, let's see who... Marv Wolfman edited this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he may have been at the time here in... This came out... When did this comic come out? This came out in 1975 because it's dated February 76. And of course, in the olden days, comics were dated like months in advance. Okay, Marv Wolfman may have been at the time the editor-in-chief of Marvel overall, because they were just going through one editor-in-chief after another. Nobody really kept the job for long. And Marv Wolfman, I'm pretty sure, was one of the dudes who oversaw the entire company. And if that's the case, he probably didn't have the time to micromanage all of his books, which would explain that horrible cover and the horrible thing where it said, most fearsome villain of all and all that. Because, yeah, that was pretty bad. Now, this dude here, Bill Mantlow, who wrote this, he, a few years ago, was in a horrible accident. And I'm not making this up. This is for real. He was in a horrible accident, and he is now a vegetable. He's now just a drooling vegetable. He's out of comics, obviously, since he can't wipe himself, let alone write comics. And I would just like to say that, judging by the writing in this comic, I think we had signs, early warning signs, of him becoming a drooling vegetable, even then. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was not really impressed. This did not hold my attention, as you'll soon find out. I'm noticing up at the top, I don't know if the, whatever you call that, top banner thingy, that he doesn't, that someone says that he's hero for hire. So at least they give it a little pass. They give it a little tiny nudge, you know.
Yeah, Jim Shooter did away with these things, these little explanatory paragraphs at the top of the first pages when he took over, because his thinking was that you should explain what the character and the book are all about in the context of the comic, which led to, like, really lame stuff. Like, every issue of X-Men, you would have Wolverine being like, and the adamantium claws I keep in the bionic housings in my forearms.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that.
Whew.
And I don't follow some of that stuff, but I could tell that there was a definite change.
Now, if you notice here, it says that in the caption on the first page, that the what they call the dreaded deadline doom has struck again. So apparently, this used to happen all the time. They would have a story going, it would be continued, then you'd buy the next issue, and instead of a continuation of that story, you would have an inventory story that had nothing to do with what had been going on previously, because somebody blew a deadline. And you know what? That was a great practice, and they need to go back to it. Because you know what that means? That means that this comic came out on time. Granted, it's not the story that was going on in the comic, and it's another writer altogether. I don't care. I miss the days when you would expect a comic to come out every month or every other month, however it was supposed to come out, and it would actually come out. I mean, we don't have that anymore.
Now, that's a surprise to me, because I know how careful you are about numbering and letters and continuities and that sort of thing. So, in my mind, I'd rather have the same story abruptly.
You're lying. You hate late comics as much as I do.
I don't. I would rather have the same story, and I'd rather have some kind of system in place that you get the story out on time.
Well, see, I'm fine with okay. Somebody blew a deadline. Here's a story anyway.
I mean, you don't.
We owe you a story this month, and here it is.
I mean, it'd be kind of like, you know, the Watergate story breaking in on Thursday, and then on Friday they're running something, you know, innocuous. You know, on Friday they also run the Watergate story. They just have to get it out. It's not like they can throw in, you know, a Beetle Bailey comic on the front page.
No. Well, they're not doing that.
This is an effective Beetle Bailey comic. This is
and Bill Mantlow at the time, he was their like go-to guy for this sort of thing, because he's so bad. He's such a bad writer that, of course, it apparently like took him takes him no time at all to throw together a story. And boy, does it show.
Oh, so he's Bill Mantlow, writer for hire.
Yes,
I see. Now I'm starting to get the whole Marvel picture from this era. You're putting it all together for me.
Oh, DC would do the same thing.
Okay.
And here's why Marvel's better than DC. At least Marvel would explain it. DC would just run a reprint with no explanation. That's really lean.
Well, they're so good they don't have to explain.
Oh, clearly you've never read a 70s era DC comic.
Did they just call us pilgrims? Is that narrator, whoever he's saying that they got deadline, dogma, doom, or whatever that is, does this say that we, as much as we hate to say it, pilgrims? Am I a pilgrim?
Yeah, because, well, Stan Lee used to call the readers pilgrims, and...
I thought we were true believers.
We are true believers.
Are we true believers?
We are Marvelites, and we are pilgrims.
Yet you make fun of the phrase Trekkie.
Yeah.
But you're a Marvelite.
No, I'm a Marvel zombie. Because zombies are... No, zombies are cool. Because
you're a Marvelite, it's not like you're a dance squad member or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a Marvel zombie?
No, I'm a Marvel zombie. I am not a dance squad member.
Crushed to death?
I'm not the one who owns a cat.
Crushed to death under the stack of comics? And...
You hate Marvel. You hate Hal Jordan and you hate Marvel.
Yes, I want Hal Jordan in the Marvel Universe where he belongs. I think it's ridiculous he's in DC.
Well, here, Luke has apparently been assigned to guard a truck. And, of course, he's doing a lousy job because somebody's taking off with it. Oh, here's a sound effect. Tram. Okay, even I'll admit that's a bad one.
Yeah.
This is better. We have a full-page explosion. Ka-twoom! That's the second best sound effect we have seen in any comic we have reviewed for this podcast. The first, of course, being truck-hoom.
Right. You like any kind of hoom.
And, you know, I think there should be two monsters, truck-hoom and... Ka-twoom, and they should do battle.
Right, as long as they each wear purple pants.
This is bad here.
Sweet jumping Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. He would say shit like this all the fucking time.
Does Christmas jump?
I'm not going to defend that. You know, Marvel did do the comics code back in this era. And, yeah, instead of, cursing, you know Luke Cage would curse. I mean, come on. Instead, he's always saying shit like this. Like he says here, sweet jumping Christmas. Usually it's just sweet Christmas. The explosion apparently rates a sweet jumping Christmas,
yeah, well,
which again, I'm not going to defend.
Yeah, but look at that. Look at that. Yeah, look at it go. It's blown up. Massive, massive explosion.
Yeah, a massive waste of an entire page. It does not take a whole page to show something
blowing up. It does, too. A sweet jumping Christmas, it certainly does.
Well, here's apparently whatever he was guarding, the truck or whatever, is burning up because it was blown up here. And there's a flashback of the dudes who asked him to guard their stuff. And we see that they're under pressure by some gangster who carved an X into this guy's chest. And actually, that's pretty cool because this guy could be a walking advertisement for Podcast X now.
Yes, he could.
He could just walk around with the X exposed and people could ask him, hey, what's that? He could say, why, it's for Podcast X. You should listen. Okay, here's Luke is beating himself up and somebody hits him with a crowbar. That's pretty cool. And the guy takes off. He chases him.
Why do you every time the hero gets hurt, you're like, that's pretty cool?
What, are you rooting for the good guys? It's the villains that are cool.
It's the DC way. Okay. Yeah. All right, keep going.
I just want to say, though, this particular villain in this comic, not so cool. And here you go.
Oh!
Yeah, here's the villain.
Oh, that is an ugly mofo.
Okay, go ahead. Tell the readers what listeners, what we're looking at.
We're seeing the Fish King here. Looks like he's a fish dude, and he's got a little sycophant there, one of those little 2 foot high, little yes men. That's kind of Mr. Cage, this here the boss. Oh yeah, he's racist.
And this is the actual dialogue in the comic.
And then of course the big villain says that you've got to point out to you that no one laughs at Mr. Fish. Well, this is the most ridiculous thing.
And again, I'm laughing at Mr. Fish.
Right. So this is kind of another angle to that cover that we saw. Only they're not suspended and over the city.
Well, because once again, the scene on the cover appears nowhere in the comic.
Okay. Now he really looks like a fish in this one.
Yeah, and his dudes are look at how his minions are dressed.
Oh yeah, that's Ben Bedelic, all right.
Woof! I mean, look at the one guy's hat. All he's missing is the big fur coat. Man, this is pretty bad.
Yeah, even though that's interesting. Even though the slugs don't penetrate, Power Man, they hurt him still. I mean, he still gets hurt, which I kind of like. He's the one superhero that doesn't,
That would be cool.
I like that.
Except. Because I actually, every single issue, it seems, of this book back then, that would happen. He would get shot, and he would think about, wow, it's lucky I'm like bulletproof, except boy, does this hurt.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we get the message after what's it been here, 29 issues.
I get it.
And
makes you wonder why he, never mind.
Well, he's beating up the bad guys here. And he speaks one of the most ludicrous lines of dialogue in comics ever, which is, it's Mr. Fish I want.
And you're just in the way.
Oh, look at the little dude jumps on his head. That's actually almost funny.
That may be, Mr. Cage. But you got to go through me first.
Yeah. The little midget sycophant is like, it's like that cartoon where like you had the big dog and the little bitty dog, and the little bitty dog was jumping around. What are we going to do today, Spike? What are we going to do today? Ha, ha, ha. That's what this like midget reminds me of.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, you know, it's funny because Luke Cage was really mowing down the bad guys until the midget jumped on his head. And then, now I think like Luke Cage is like thrown for a loop, like, what the fuck? And it gives like Mr. Fish enough time to, okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute here. He says he's just keeping him busy till the boss gets his stuff together. At which point Mr. Fish pulls out like a death ray gun saying, my stuff is ready, Shrike. And Mr. Cage is he could have shot him during all that time he was beating up the other bad guys.
Yeah, you got a point.
Till the boss gets his stuff together. What, it takes Mr. Fish an entire minute to pull a gun out of a holster?
Well, maybe the gun's got to recharge. It's a big gun.
Maybe he has trouble like working his fish hands, and I don't know.
Yeah, he's got performance anxiety.
And you cooked him, Mr. Fish. Ride him like a flounder. Yeah, I guess everything's going to be fish related.
Yes, he still lives. It's amazing they go back and forth with all the funky.
Well, the minions are talking like, you know, blaxploitation characters, whereas Mr. Fish seems relatively well-spoken. A well-spoken fish.
Ugh.
This comic is very strange. Okay, and here, okay, once again, this is every comic.
Instead of killing him.
Instead of just killing him, right.
It's kind of like the, you know.
This could have been the last issue of Power Man.
It's kind of like James Bond.
They got to take him all the way to the top of the building. And Cage is all, like, tied up here, and he starts waking up, and the midget slaps him in the face. I don't know what I like better, the Cage getting hit with the crowbar or the midget just slapping him here, because that's got to be humiliating to be beat up by a midget. And we have a flashback of, this is Mr. Fish's origin. Apparently, okay, this annoys me. The Magia. Marvel Comics in the 60s, and I think all the way through the 70s, including this, they never referred to the Mafia. It was always the Magia, which you knew was supposed to be the Mafia. And I'm like, what? Are they afraid? What was the Mafia going to do? Sue? Well, I don't know if there's movies about the Mafia. What? That just never made any sense to me.
It is funny. It's only one letter off, too.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And here in the flashback, you have the origin of Mr. Fish, which, you know, we really didn't need to know this, and all this is doing is padding. It's just filling out pages. Were you really fascinated by Mr. Fish to the point where you had to know his secret origin?
Well, let me get this straight. Okay, you can't say the word Mafia, but you can have a guy reading Playboy?
Yeah, and he even says Playboy. Well, look, it's two words, though. Playboy.
Oh, okay.
And also notice that's not a real issue of Playboy, because when have you ever seen an issue of Playboy that just had an ass on the cover?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the artist being lazy. Although the artist is George Tuska, who did do some good stuff on Iron Man around the same time. Okay, so like his backstory was he was a low-level gangster. His mission was to steal like some radioactive shit. And of course he falls with the radioactive shit into the river. And he comes out, and of course the radioactive shit has turned him into Mr. Fish. Because in the Marvel Universe, radiation gives you superpowers.
Or makes your butt ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Mr. Fish actually has any superpowers proper.
He just looks like a fish.
You know, now I'm almost feeling sorry for him. I mean, Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive spider. He gets spider powers. And the Hulk gets caught in a gamma bomb. He becomes the Hulk. This dude turns into a fish.
And he's got no powers whatsoever.
He should have called himself Limpet Man. Well, after Mr. Limpet.
Yeah.
This is horrible. This comic is horrible.
R.I.P. Don Knotts, by the way.
How far did you... Now, since I know you didn't finish... You actually told me you couldn't finish it because it was so bad. How far did you make it?
I'm about where I got to. Yeah, I kind of got to right before the origin. I have the same feeling that you did, is that, sadly, where are the superpowers? As soon as I realized he was just a normal guy with a gun that looks like a fish, now I'm starting to think, does he need to go back in the water? Is he going to dry out? Is it like an Aquaman thing? Has he got some
time block? You Trekkies always get caught up in details.
I got so caught up in the details that I couldn't even get past. I was just so taken with how bad this comic was.
Well, actually, you're one of your heroes, since you're such a DC fan. Aquaman actually does have to be immersed in water at least once every hour. How lame is that?
You'd think he would carry a little spritzer with him.
Here, he throws Cage off the building. Cage breaks free of his bonds. Here he is. He grabbed onto a girder on the way down, so he's hanging on to the girder now.
Okay.
You know, it's always bad. It's always a bad layout art-wise when you have to put arrows to show the reader what direction you're supposed to be reading the
panels. Yeah, it kind of doesn't work. It sort of doesn't make any sense.
Well, hence the arrow. But that's my point, is that this layout is not good. Yeah, the midget is running at Cage here. Cage ducks out of the way, and the midget smashes his skull on a girder. That's pretty decent.
That midget reminds me of that little guy from Star Wars that hung on Jabba's, like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same vibe.
Salacious, what the hell's that character called?
I died.
The one that just goes...
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. All of a sudden, by the way, Mr. Fish is shooting Cage with the death ray gun, and all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, it doesn't affect him, even though it affected him before. And he even says, "Not this time, Fish. This time is different."
But why? Why
the fuck would it be different? It knocked him out the first time. Why all of a sudden would it not work?
Well, maybe if we go to the next page, we can find out.
I don't think so. See? No explanation. Mr. Fish is like, it didn't affect you.
Well, he's prepared for
and,
it.
And Luke Cage says, you catch one quick, Fish.
Well, he's just prepared for it.
No, he's not prepared for it. It's just the fact that the comic's almost over.
Well, maybe he, you know, his power is that he sort of gets used to other, you know, attacks. You know what I'm saying?
That's not true, though. That's never been said.
Well, I'm trying to help out the writer.
Man.
Well, hey, look, in my own defense, I'm in my own defense. I'm not going to defend this. I couldn't even get through it.
This is pretty indefensible. And it's a shame, because by and large, these old Luke Cage comics were pretty decent, even if in a cheesy way. But this...
You managed to find us one of the worst comics I've ever read.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, is it worse than the Bride of Jungle Jimmy?
Yeah, because by this time they should have known better.
You know, they still don't know better, though, if you look at some of the comics being published today.
Yeah.
Look at Infinite Crisis 6.
Doesn't Hulk have like his own planet or something like that?
Yeah, Planet Hulk. I'm not reading that. Yeah. You read the setup for that. How was that?
Yeah, I couldn't read that.
Not good.
You know, you get
40, there's no way that can possibly.
I don't quite get it. You know, you get 40 years of Reed Richards dealing with Hulk, and all of a sudden he decides to slap in a rocket and go to outer space. Come on. I mean, you know.
Okay, well, I can. Okay, this has nothing to do with Power Man, but actually in New Avengers Illuminati, which we've already established you didn't read, there was a scene where the Hulk was shown as being responsible for the deaths of countless innocents, which all by itself is sort of retcon, because they've always been careful to say that, okay, well, the Hulk's on a rampage here, but nobody died.
Right, people jump out of the way.
Well, in Illuminati, suddenly they talk about, oh yeah, every time the Hulk goes on a rampage, lots of innocent people die. Now, how the past changed, I have no idea. Maybe Superboy punched something so hard that it even affected the past of the Marvel Universe.
Could be.
I can only assume.
Well, that's that Hypertime thing you told me about.
Let's all forget about Hypertime, because DC has, so we may as well too.
Ah.
And Reed and Tony and the rest of those guys are saying, hey, the Hulk keeps killing people, let's get rid of him. So they had to, like, do some retcon to make that even make sense.
Ah.
Now, mind you, I like the idea of Hulk killing people, even if inadvertently, because, yeah, that's what would happen. He's trashing a city and stuff. I mean, you know when Godzilla trounces a city, people die. I'm just saying. I like Carnage. What can I say? I'm a Marvel fan.
I can tell. Okay,
Luke Cage's insults aren't even good in this. Usually Luke Cage has some good insults. He's called him, like, fish face. Here he calls him slimy. The writer's not even fucking trying. Even the sound effects are lazy. Pal. Oh, yeah, he really agonized over coming up with that one.
What, did he
write this on his lunch break?
Well, well-placed Pow isn't so bad, But the Fish King's given him a run for his money, and he must be strong. His superpower must be he must have the strength of
10,000. Oh, fish?
I think he has the strength of 1,000 fishes, because here he's lifting up a girder.
That's true.
Look, I can't lift up a girder.
So he does have some low-grade super strength here.
And another reason why Mrs. Trekkie isn't around anymore. So, no, you weren't supposed to move. What the hell is that?
Mr. Fish picked up a girder. We see that he's lunging at him, charging with the girder.
Yeah.
And Luke just sort of, yeah, this doesn't work, does it?
No.
Well, I guess Luke is somehow sort of supposed to be crouching out of the way, and Mr. Fish just flies over him. And this isn't bad. Mr. Fish just goes flying over the edge and plummets to his death. Which is, now that's cool.
I expected Luke Cage to say something like, "You're tuna now, Mr. Fish," but...
I'm glad he didn't. And here we see the end of the story. The corpse of Mr. Fish, broken and laying under the girder that he was going to use to kill Cage with. Cage is here on the ground, walking away. And here's what I like, is that instead of, like, being like, oh man, that sucked that an innocent, relatively innocent guy had to die here. I could have defeated him without killing him. Cage is feeling sorry for himself, and I like that. Because after all, he's a hero for hire. He's not an altruist.
So, but he says, he's reflective. He's like, hey, why am I doing this?
This is the only good part of the story, is this little bit of soul searching at the end.
Why am I doing this? Can't be the money, because I don't make any. Can't be the fame, because there's even less of that. But there's got to be something in it.
I think. Yeah, that's fine. I like the last page. We should have just reviewed the last page, actually.
Yeah, I would have been for
it. The whole rest of the comic was crap.
I would have been for just jumping to the last page.
You know, there's some kind of a weird fish thing going on, because we see the next issue blurb, and it says, a return to our Piranha Jones adventure.
Oh.
So there's another fish-themed villain, if he's calling himself Piranha Jones.
And they're saying, and the musical question is, look what they've done to our lives, Ma.
Well, that's a play on, there was a pop song like around 1970 or so called Look What They've Done to My Song, Ma.
Right.
So that's just cheap wordplay that even you can't possibly approve of.
I don't like that. And I've named half these podcasts.
Normally we do the 1 to 10 scale. I give this comic the finger. Trekkie?
I give it three cans of tuna. I don't know what to give it. How can I even rate this thing? How can you rate something I couldn't
actually
finish?
I like the tuna rating. How about you give it like two cans of tuna, one with a bone in it?
I'll give it some tuna. I give it some old sushi, some old stinky sushi, and a red herring. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 10.
Wow.
Yes, I'm going to give it a solid 4.
I mean, I know the art has some character, but 4?
I'm giving it 4 out of 10 because of the last several panels.
Ah.
You know? Because otherwise it would be like 2. So.
This comic was so... This is one of those comics, to me, it was so bad it made me angry. Seriously, I mean, if I didn't like Luke Cage, I wouldn't be so pissed off. But you hate to... I mean, this was a comic that was struggling to find an audience, and they throw this out there. I mean, if I read this and it's my first Luke Cage comic, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But they even say in the beginning, it's a throwaway, which makes... Thank you for helping me make my point.
I'm sorry.
No, I made my point. Don't put out crap.
This was crap. There is something to be said for a comic coming out on time, though, because it really is getting ridiculous.
Would you rather...
Hey, what was the last issue of Ultimates you enjoyed, and when did it come out?
Well, I don't know, but the point is that would you rather wait for good stuff or have timely crap? And that's
both,
the argument
both,
we're having.
Both. I like the good stuff, but I'd rather at least they throw some crap out there than have nothing.
But you said several seconds ago, you said... If I were, this was the first Luke Cage comic I read, I wouldn't pick up another issue.
I can't even believe you believe this, because I know how much you also hate late comics.
It doesn't matter.
You may hate late comics more than I do.
Quality. I'm telling you. quality if I pick up crap.
You know what? We can have both. It wouldn't cost much for them to get some decent writers to put together a nice inventory of like, you know, stories for each given comic that's being published, and you wouldn't have to resort to running something this bad.
I wonder if a good writer could.
I was going to say there is no writer this bad anymore, but then I remember John Winnick.
Ooh.
Just saying.
Is there a...
Speaking of drooling vegetables.
Is he dead, this guy Fish King? Is he definitely dead?
I thought you were asking Judd if John Winnick was dead. No, I was going to say, I can only wish.
No.
This is very strange. For some reason, they never brought back Mr. Fish.
Now, I'm wondering, because people don't...
We probably shouldn't be giving them that idea.
People don't die in the Marvel Universe ever, so I'm thinking,
except for Mr. Fish.
I'm wondering if there's a way a really good writer could have handled this any better.
No. There's no way... There's nothing you could do with Mr. Fish.
But he had the strength of 1,000 fishes.
He did have the strength of 1,000 fishes. But, I mean, look at him. Just look at him.
I know.
Exactly.
But I could have had some fun with him. You know, he's slippery, slimy. You can't get a hold of him. You know, Luke Cage goes for it and he slips out of your finger.
He's
probably rather stinky.
You know what? He would be good to, like, bring back as a joke in, like, Next Weave or something. As a joke villain. Like they made fun of Fin Fang Foom.
Right.
That's the only... I can't see a serious Mr. Fish story.
Well, I mean, I wonder if is there a fish community? Does he talk to other fish? Can he only talk to fish of his own species?
Although, you know what? It would almost be cool if, like, there was a long story and there was, like, a criminal organization and nobody knows who the boss is. And the big reveal would be that the boss would be Mr. Fish. Because imagine how angry all little fanboys would be.
Amen, brother.
And on that note... Oh, wait till they catch a load of what we're going to do next time.
Why don't you give them a little sneak peek?
Yeah, I'll just give them the title. If you liked Pimpadelic Podcast, or even if you didn't like Pimpadelic Podcast, tune in next time for Modcast X.
Oh, yeah.
From my party house, I'm afraid to come outside. Although I'm filled with love, I'm afraid they'll hurt my pride. I play the part I feel they want me, and I pull the shade so I won't see them seeing me. Having hard times in this crazy town. Having hard times, there's no love to be found. Having hard times in this crazy town. Having hard times, there's no love. Familiar face of creed and the race, a brother. But to my surprise, I find a man corrupt. Although he be my brother, he wants to hold me up. Having hard times in this crazy town. Having hard times, there's no love to be found. Having hard times in this crazy town. On motel floors, knocking on my brother's door.